Welcome to The Dildork, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and I am a feminine feminist. Ooh, who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I guess I'm mask? People keep telling me I'm mask. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel it in your heart?
I don't know. I'm a dude. Mm-hmm. I've got that much down.
Yeah, but you're kind of like a flamboyant dude, a la Brendan Urie.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd probably be more femme if I could pass while being, like, more femme. Like, I wear a lot of crop tops and short shorts. So, yeah.
I want to get to a point in our cultural evolution where crop tops and short shorts are not coded as feminine. Because, like, what is gendered about showing off your body? We all have bodies. They're all great.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't fucking know.
Okay. We're talking about gender today, and specifically about masculinity and femininity, which, of course, are not the whole story of gender, but they are some interesting features of the gender landscape. Bex, big question off the top. Are gender roles good or bad? Discuss.
It's 10 a.m. Fuck.
It's like a philosophy lecture over here.
Yeah, shit. So gender and gender roles are not the same thing.
Yes, important distinction. And
I think attributing specific cultural roles to gender is not great. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think that means we need to eliminate gender entirely. Because gender is a fun thing to play with, and I think there will always be a range of ways people present, and gender isn't a binary, but I think it is a helpful framework to play around within.
Yeah, when I think about whether gender roles are good, I think a lot about the episode of Why Are People Into That? That's about chivalry, where Tina Horn interviews Esper Bergman about the concept of chivalry, and both of those people are, like, kind of known gender weirdos in various ways, and so their conversation is, like, very non-gendered, and so I think a lot of people would try to argue that, like, gender roles are in some ways positive because they contain sometimes some degree of, like, politeness or consideration for each other, especially in terms of chivalry, but, like, that doesn't need to be gendered, and a lot of the positive qualities we ascribe to certain genders do not need to only belong to that gender. So we need to open our minds as a culture, I think.
Yeah.
I think that there is some value to, like, knowing your role and, like, knowing what's expected of you, as long as it's a positive role. But, like, again, that does not need to be connected to gender.
I think it's a fun thing to unpack, too.
Yeah.
Like, to look at, all right, well, how does my gender present, and what do I think that means about who I have to be, and how much of that do I want to take, and how much of that do I want to leave, and, like, what are expectations of genders other than mine, and do any of those appeal to me?
Yeah, it's interesting how, like, sometimes you can feel like you're subverting a gender role in some way, but, like, it doesn't get read that way. Like, I think about this a lot when I'm out with my boyfriend, because, like, he's my dom, and, like, that's a very consensual dynamic, and he often, like, orders food and drinks for me when we're out, and I get the sense that the waitstaff think that that's kind of, like, archaic and weird, that I'm, like, out with a man, and, like, he takes care of all the decisions, and, like, oh, this poor woman who's, like, under the heel of this man, and I don't have, like, a good way of communicating to them, like, I asked for this, and I want this, and this is good, and I would probably want this even if my partner wasn't a dude, so it's hard.
Yeah, I think that's part of the issue of playing with kink stuff in public, though.
Yeah.
because other people get roped into things that they don't know the full story about.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's a relatively, like, low risk and, like, low involvement way. So, like, I don't feel like I'm, like, breaching consent with other people or anything. But I do get the sense that people sometimes think my boyfriend is, like, an archaic brute, which is, like, not the case at all. Okay, so how have your feelings about masculinity versus femininity shifted over the course of your life?
When I was growing up and socialized as a girl, woman, whatever, you're given a very specific framework of what masculinity is, and it meant a couple of things to me. It meant I was taught to view it in the ways that it was a threat to me, or in the ways that I was supposed to be attracted to it. But also, I kind of idolized it because baby trans, and didn't recognize the ways in which I did that. I kind of took on a lot of pieces of toxic masculinity, thinking they meant strength and power and just kind of this idealized version of what I wanted to be, when I realized through my transness that, like, I wanted to be masculine and or I identified as a boy, but that didn't have to come with all of these facets of masculinity that I had picked up along the way. And still working on the process of kind of unpacking that.
Yeah. So you had a period of time when you were, like, strongly identifying as more, like, non-binary, like, more in the middle, and then, like, more recently you've come to identify more on the masculine side. So, like, what happened there that made that happen?
I think when I was identifying as non-binary was, and I still do, like, identifying as masculine is easier, especially in a world full of cis people. But I feel like my gender is always going to be more complicated than one word can just kind of sum up. And my transness is inherently non-binary. But for me, non-binary was an easier step because I still felt attached to things that I considered feminine. Like, I'm realizing lately, I still like pretty clothes and, like, things that pretty girls would wear. And, like, I miss being able to wear that stuff, but I'm just not comfortable being viewed as a woman anymore. So one day when I'm furrier and pass more as a dude, I might go back to that. But recognizing those things in myself that I'm like, well, that's not a thing dudes do. And now I'm like, ah, yeah, it could be though. And I'm the kind of dude that does do that. And it was a lot of unpacking the gender roles that I had already assigned to these different genders. And I thought if I was transitioning into a masculine person, I had to fit in the man box. And I don't, because I don't fit in most boxes.
Yeah. The man box. That's the name of my favorite nightclub or something.
Well, it's a book, I believe.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's an existing theory.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I went to this discussion group one time where this cis man told a story about he had been walking past this shop window and he saw this, like, beautiful dress in the window and was suddenly struck by this feeling of, like, what if I went in there and, like, tried on this dress and how beautiful I would look and everything. And then he was just too shy and scared to go in and actually do that. And he's, like, thought about it ever since. And as he told this story, I was, like, weeping, because it's just, like, the gender boxes that we put people in are, like, so harmful and limit people's pleasure and joy so much. And it's just, like, really upsetting when you think about it too much.
Yeah, and part of, like, I don't know, thinking about the way you present, like, I'm wearing a lot of short shorts and crop tops this summer, and, like, when I walk up to the public bathroom, I have to decide which one I go in. And, like, I was at a concert recently with cis man and a cis woman, and they both separated to go to the bathrooms, and I stuck with the cis woman because I was like, today it's safer for me to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I had, if I had gone with the man that we were with, he would have watched me and taken care of me, and I would have been fine and safe, but I would have dealt with, like, conflict in a way that I didn't want to.
Yeah.
But having to make those decisions about how you present in public and everything, and, like, having to decide, is it safe for me to go and try on that pretty dress, and probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when I first met Esper Bergman, trans writer, at a reading like 10 plus years ago, that he was talking about this, I think it was him, he was talking about this website that was called something like Safe to Pee, and it was like a directory of like public bathrooms that had like single stall or like genderless bathrooms available, because that's like something that trans people need to know about. I don't know if that resource is still available, but yeah, like, when you don't fit into gender boxes, like, life immediately becomes so much more complicated and in so many ways, like, every day, and I think a lot of cis people, like, don't think about that or don't realize that.
Yeah. Also, can I just pause to say that single stall bathrooms that are still gendered are the bane of my existence?
Yeah, like, why?
Because fucking why?
What is the point? What are you gaining from that?
Why do you do this to me?
Yeah. I went into a single stall men's bathroom at a coffee shop recently because the women's one had been occupied for like 20 plus minutes and I had to get out of there. And like, nobody said anything. People get it, I think. But like, I was pretty freaked out the whole time I was in there. I was like, what happens if you like get caught? Like, am I going to get arrested? Like, I was having a whole anxiety spiral about it. Classic.
I just go into whichever one has the shortest line at this point.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Or whichever one I find first. Because sometimes they're not next to each other. Sometimes they're, like, weirdly separate places in the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
So whichever one I locate first is the one I go to.
That's a good policy. Yeah. Yeah, my gender journey has been much less dynamic because I'm cis. But like, yeah, I'm definitely like more feminine now. But like when I was in high school, I tended much more toward androgyny, which I think was because I was like dating women at the time, and a lot of images of queer women skew more androgynous. Although there's like also a ton of femme representation in representations of queer women, which is a problem unto itself. Like, they had the whole show The L Word with like hardly any butches in it, which is kind of a glaring omission. Not all queer women are like pretty petite femme lesbians, and that's like still an issue. But anyway, so when I was dating women, I felt more, it wasn't like external pressure. I just felt like more inclined to dress with a little bit more of like a masculine or androgynous edge. I was very into like wearing neckties over everything, like things that you really shouldn't be wearing neckties with. But I was like, this is how you queer woman, right? This is the look. A lot of like bow ties too. Not great, but you know, I went to a weirdo art school, so there's that.
You can get away with a lot at weirdo art schools, I figure.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some ways now that you dress or present yourself that feel affirming of your particular gender identity?
I wear a lot of snapbacks.
Mm-hmm. They're so cute on you.
Which I'm convinced make me look more masculine. I don't know if it's true or not, and it's kind of a trans guy TM thing. A lot of us do it. Pretty sure it makes me look... There's an episode of Queer Eye where there's a trans guy on it, with the new reboot. And they walk into one room, and he has a wall of snapbacks, just they're all hanging on the wall, and I feel directly called out by that episode. They walked in and I was like, hey, And I tweeted something, and my roommate was like, it's the snapbacks, isn't it? I was like, shut up! But yeah, and then other than that, my uniform is mostly, like, if I want to feel mask and good in my identity, it's mostly just black t-shirts and jeans and a flannel, depending on the weather. Because I feel like I pass the best with that look.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is related, but I noticed that, like, a lot of boys who I knew in, like, early high school had, like, a signature hat that they would wear every single day. And it was enough that I started to, like, think of it as, like, a trend where I was like, what are these boys gaining from, like, wearing the same hat every day? And I think it must have been some kind of sense of confidence or security. But, like, I can kind of get that. Like, I've definitely had phases where I've, like, fixated on particular items of clothing because they just made me feel closer to how I wanted to feel on a daily basis. And that felt important.
Yeah, I just wear the same damn thing every day. I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, like a cartoon character.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I've kind of, like, evolved toward that in recent years, too. Like, I'm very much, like, a dress and boots, which feels like a good mix. Like, as feminine as I am, I've never been into heels. Like, I won't abide with that shit. Like, it's too much effort and instability and pain. And I like being feminine, but I don't like the parts of it that are, like, all based in pain. Like, I've never been waxed. Says the masochist. And stuff. Yeah, I mean, I've thought a lot about, like, whether I could derive some kind of kink pain from, like, getting waxed or more mundane pain, like walking in heels. And I do think, like, the times that I have worn heels recently have always been because a partner thought that they were hot, or I was, like, dressed up for a particular romantic or sexy thing with a partner. And so it is interesting how, like, consensual kink is definitely a stronger motivator for me than, like, conventional gender pressures. But
yeah, when I was doing femme stuff, I only knew how to do, like, exaggerated femme drag. Which was fun, but usually involved very, very high heels and corsets and all kinds of ridiculousness that, like, I miss wearing and might go back to wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt like a costume then, and I think it could still be a fun costume now.
Yeah, that is kind of one of the benefits of that sort of traditional over-the-top femininity that we see in, like, movies and magazines and stuff, is it feels like this, like, sharpened weapon of, like, desirability. And there isn't entirely a masculine equivalent, I think, because we don't hypersexualize masculine bodies in the same way and to the same extent in our media and culture. So there is something about it that feels really super powerful. I think it's part of why I've been wearing, like, winged eyeliner almost every day for the past, like, 12 years. Because, like, I put it on one time for a Halloween costume to dress as Marilyn Monroe, and I immediately noticed, like, a shift in the way that I was feeling, and even kind of the way that people were responding to me. Like, it was kind of this, like, grown-up, powerful, sexy femininity that I wanted more of, but that also felt kind of like a costume, like you were saying. Like, it can feel sort of like drag, because there are very few people, I think, who that kind of femininity comes naturally to. Like, it's kind of over-the-top, definitionally. Who are your role models of masculinity or femininity, like, that are positive or that you think are sexy or, like, doing that really well? Gender role models.
You mentioned Brendan Urie earlier, and I'm just going to take... So I haven't fanboyed over anyone since, like, high school. Like, it's been a very long time since I've, like, felt that kind of, like, rabid fan, like, feelings. Mm-hmm. I love him. I saw two different Panic at the Disco concerts this week, and a Fall Out Boy concert, because I'm ridiculous. So I might be on that, like, a little hard right now, but just, like, because he is solidly masculine, but has this, like, flamboyance to him. Mm-hmm. Like, he performed, he came out. First of all, he rises out of the stage and, like, jumps out of the platform. He doesn't, like, let it rise him. He, like, dives out in leather pants, a tight black shirt, and a black suit jacket covered in gold glitter. Yes. So, like, every time it hits the light, it sparkles.
Amazing.
Because he's so extra. He does a drums... Okay. He flies over the crowd on a white piano. And also does a drum solo where, in the middle of Miss Jackson, drums rise out of the stage and he does a drum solo and then backflips off of the drums to continue singing. He is so extra and I love him so much.
Theatrical masculinity. I love it.
Yes. Yeah, because, like, they're... You don't get that kind of showiness from men a lot of times. Like, yeah. They feel like they have to be more subdued. And, like, he is just... You can tell he's just living his best life. Mm-hmm. He, like... At the end of the show, he's like, and I want to thank the crew, you know, I told them I wanted a light show, and I want fire shooting out of the stage, and they were like, yeah, and then I was like, and I want a flying piano, and they were like, what? So definitely Brendan Urie. Also Jack Harkness from Torchwood and Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just owns his sexuality in a way that, like, he's just dripping with it, but not creepy. Like, he is very clearly into everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And is just, like, charming and friendly and, like... There's a scene where he says, hi, I'm... He, like, meets someone and goes, hey, you know, I'm Jack Harkness. And the doctor's like, no flirting. And he's like, I just said my name. He's like, for you, that's flirting. And I relate very deeply to that.
Yeah, that definitely resonates with my understanding of you as a person. I'm really drawn to that, like, flamboyant masculinity, too. Like, not for my own presentation, but just, like, as an attraction thing. And it like, when I was in early high school, I had this string of crushes that were all gay men who were involved in musical theater. Like, people I Naturally. Knew, and then also local actors. And it got to a point where I was like, is this just, like, my type? Like, am I just, like, doomed to be in love with gay men forever? Like, this is going to be an issue. And I think what actually was happening was I am drawn to that sort of... I wouldn't describe it really as, like, androgynous or feminine types of masculinity. It's just sort of, like, a showy, you know, gregarious, exuberant masculinity that often shows up in queer men, and then also men who are, like, in the creative fields. And obviously yeah. not all of them are gay. But I do think it's interesting that I've dated a lot of bi dudes, because I think that once you kind of come out as not straight, it opens a lot of doors, and maybe you feel more comfortable being a little bit less traditional hetero masculine type of situation. So, yeah, I'm very much drawn to, like, loud, goofy dudes who do silly voices and gesticulate a lot and maybe dress a little flashy.
Yeah. Jack Harkness is, like, very clearly canonically pansexual. And Brendan Urie just recently came out as pansexual, and everyone was like, yeah. Yeah, we know. He performed Girls, Girls, Boys while draped in a rainbow flag.
Oh my god.
And the entire audience gets these heart-shaped pieces of paper, and depending on the section you're in, you got a different color.
Mm-hmm.
So that when Girls, Girls, Boys comes on, you hold it over the flashlight on your phone and a sea of rainbow lights go across the crowd.
That's just such a goals coming out celebration. Like, how wonderful.
It's amazing.
Interesting. I feel like my role models of femininity are quite different, but in similar ways also kind of transgressive. Like, when I think about my kind of dream femininity, I think a lot about queer vaguely femmy characters from fiction. Like, Olivia Wilde in The O.C. is a big one for me. She's got, like, the purple streaks in her hair, and she's, like, kind of a punk, but also, like, very feminine and, like, very sexy. And then I also think about Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, who has, like, this sort of tough black leather femininity that I don't know if I could pull it off, but, like, there are definitely times in my head when I'm strutting down the street and I feel very Rosa. And then,
ooh, Jake Peralta too.
Jake Peralta is just a treasure, and canonically interested in deconstructing gender roles. We could do a whole episode about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, honestly, and I don't know if there's the audience or the interest for that, but we really could. We have so many feelings about that show.
I really do, yeah.
Yeah, because that show's, like, very interesting on gender in general. Like, I think that it's super interesting that the male leads, like, Charles and Terry, and to a lesser extent, Jake, all kind of have qualities that are, like, traditionally associated with femininity. Like, you have Charles, who's, like, very into cooking and food and taking care of the people he loves, and is, like, very paternal towards his son. Then you have Terry, who's, like, also very into food and, like, specifically yogurt, which is an interesting choice, and then, like, so protective of his daughters.
Apparently Terry Crews loves yogurt. Like, that was just a real thing. Like, that wasn't a choice. He just got really excited about yogurt, and they were like, put it in!
It's very, very interesting. There's a lot of, like, strong choices in that show. And then you also have, like, Amy and Rosa, who, like, Amy is, like, very, like, overachiever, like, definitely going to be super successful in her career. And then Rosa is, like, very strong and tough and scary. And so, you know, in some ways they're not great, because, like, as you have pointed out to me, like, there's a transphobic joke on that show at one point, and you know, various other things, but, like, the gender choices that they made are very interesting, especially for, like, a primetime show that is that popular. Like, I think that it bodes well.
Yeah,
I'm also very into, like, over-the-top flowery femininity, like Disney princesses, like giant ball gowns and stuff like that, and, like, 80s teen queens like Molly Ringwald and stuff. But it's kind of, like, all of those elements just blend together to make this sort of weird casual femme look that I have going on. Sequins and glitter, always important, though. I mean, for anyone of any gender can get into sequins and glitter, for sure.
Yes.
I have these, like, black sequin leggings that every time I look at them, I'm like, Bex would look really good in those, too. We should just both wear them and do some kind of musical number together.
Only if I get a top hat.
Yes. You'd be Billy Wonka. I like it. All right, a bit of a heavier gender question. Now that we've talked about top hats, we can talk about toxic masculinity.
Sure.
What is toxic masculinity?
Oof. Why do I have to do all the defining?
I can try. I can take a stab at it if you want. So there's a Wikipedia article for toxic masculinity, which is interesting. The concept of toxic masculinity is used in psychology and gender studies to refer to certain norms of masculine behavior in North America and Europe that are associated with harm to society and to men themselves. Oof, what a sentence. Then it says, traditional stereotypes of men as socially dominant, along with related traits such as misogyny and homophobia, can be considered toxic due to their promotion of violence, including sexual assault and domestic violence. Interesting that they specify North America and Europe.
Yeah, well, because I think there are a lot of other places that have very different tropes of masculinity.
Yeah.
And culture is not far from a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of other places that I'm sure their masculinity manifests in other toxic ways, and it cultures where it manifests in more healthy ways.
Yeah. One would hope so, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I talk a lot about this on Twitter, and then I get people yelling at me, predictably. But when I think of toxic masculinity, I think of kind of the bad sides of socialization that is offered to men and boys in our culture, which is stuff including, like, don't take no for an answer because you got to be persistent if you want to get the girl, which is such an insidious and dangerous belief that leads to so many problems. And another common one that comes up for me a lot as someone who, like, gets a lot of DMs from random dudes is the assumption that women are all going to be, like, super grateful for your attention and time and affection, even if it's, you know, subpar and not really what they want. And that you're kind of, like, a gift. And then more recently, in, like, incel culture, we've seen kind of, like, the belief that if someone isn't into you, that it's their fault and nothing to do with you, because culture teaches us that if men are, like, nice to women, which, like, niceness is defined in pretty nebulous ways, that women are supposed to dispense sex, I guess. So those three things are definitely come to mind for me when I think of toxic masculinity.
Yeah, at the same time, you wind up with these other things, like men aren't allowed to have feelings.
Yeah.
Or men are responsible for taking control all the time,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Men are expected to be protectors in a way that when things go wrong, that comes down to them. They're supposed to lead, they're supposed to be runners of the household and make all of the decisions. And that is a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this very specific box that they need to fit in. And we're talking a lot about toxic masculinity, but like we talked about earlier, there are also some really healthy depictions of masculinity out there. Like, masculinity isn't inherently toxic,
mm-hmm.
But the way we socialize men can be.
Yeah. I heard a lot of things that I found super interesting in your panel that you did with Kevin Patterson and Christopher Smith about polyamory and masculinity. And one of the things that particularly stuck out to me was the discussion about consent and masculinity. Like, as you were just talking mm-hmm. about, like, there is the notion that men are supposed to be the ones, like, furthering the sexual narrative and, like, expressing desire and pursuing people. And so, as a result, there is this belief that if a man ever, like, says no to sex or isn't interested in sex, that something is, like, very wrong with him or wrong with the relationship or wrong with the person who's asking. And that's obviously really dangerous. Like, we're talking about consent a lot more in the past few years, and that aspect of it still isn't talked about often enough.
Yeah, and they both, in that panel, tell stories about times where they've said no, and it has started huge fights.
Yeah.
And, like, if that happened at all the other way around, if a woman said no and it started a fight,
mm-hmm.
It's very clear where the problem in there is.
Yeah.
But people socialized as women get very, take it very personally, because men are supposed to always want sex, and if they don't, well, what kind of man are they?
Right.
Marsha Baczynski talked about this a little bit on our episode, where you wind up with women in this gatekeeping model, and it takes away agency for all the people involved.
Yes. Yeah, and while I definitely don't advocate for, like, starting an argument with someone just because they said no to sex with you, I also at the same time understand that impulse, because if you've been told your whole life that a man will say yes to sex with you unquestioningly if you're, you know, baseline attractive, and then someone says no to you, like, that's very threatening to your sense of self, or it can be, at least. And so, yeah, like, this is a situation where gender roles lead us into, like, really unhealthy conflicts and beliefs about ourselves and about other people.
Yeah, and you're not even just told that they're supposed to say yes, you're told that they're supposed to pursue you at all times, that you're constantly going to have this, you're constantly going to have to be on the deep defensive, where, like, I don't know, dodging sex like you're playing dodgeball or something.
Yeah.
There's dicks just flying at you all the time. and that, like, that's just not reality.
Yeah, this belief has fucked me up so many times. Like, the time that I feel it the most acutely is when dudes on OkCupid, or just, like, in life, are like, why are you looking for a partner? Why are you on online dating sites? You're so pretty. Why don't you have a boyfriend? Like, you seem like someone who should have a boyfriend. And when I've been single and I've heard this, it has just, like, filled me with sadness, which I don't think is their desired effect. But, like, I think we're socialized, like, so intensely, especially those of us raised as girls, to believe that, like, our ability to attract romantic and sexual partners is our self-worth. And when that doesn't work out in the ways that we're expecting and hoping, it can be really devastating. All good stuff to unlearn. This is also why it's, like, really troubling when men's rights activists bring up this stuff about masculinity as their argument for why feminism is bad. And, like, yeah, the feminist movement has its problems, but feminism as an ideology is about unpacking and unlearning all of these kind of harmful behaviors and patterns and beliefs. And those definitely include the ones that are harmful to men and masculine people, like we're discussing. It's really, like, concerning when the MRAs sort of pit those two groups against each other, and they really don't have to. Like, they're working toward similar goals in many ways.
Yeah.
Which is not to say I want to ally with the MRAs, because they've got their own shit going on. But, you know. Okay, so this might be a controversial one. You told me that you have some sass to deliver for this question. Do you think there's such a thing as toxic femininity?
So, I don't think it is leading our culture in the way toxic masculinity does, but I think there are a lot of aspects of femininity that can be and are toxic that get ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Because the focus is all on toxic masculinity, and femininity is getting its time, and that's awesome, and it should, and also we shouldn't be uncritical of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I think of the phrase toxic femininity, what mostly comes to mind for me is, like, internalized misogyny, and the ways that women and feminine people can be really, like, harshly competitive with and critical of each other in ways that are very much encouraged by the patriarchy and by this patriarchal belief that, like, especially that, like, the attention of men is finite and that feminine people should compete for it, but also that opportunities in general for women and feminine folks are very finite and very limited, and that we really need to compete for them, which leads to a whole bunch of what media tends to call cattiness, but is really just internalized misogyny. I have had to confront so much internalized misogyny since getting involved in polyamory in particular, because I never notice my own internalized misogyny faster than when I'm having jealous or insecure feelings about a metamour, because whatever the things are that I feel threatened about with regards to her are often the things that I'm insecure about with myself. And so if I notice myself feeling, like, this burning rage toward a metamour, I gotta, like, check my internalized misogyny and be like, oh yeah, like, we're not actually competing here, like, we're dating the same person, but that's not a competition, and I don't need to, like, be angry at her or, you know, fight her.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing. We kind of talked about this earlier, but do you think that we'll ever evolve past gender roles / gender expectations / maybe gender?
No. I don't know, maybe that makes me a bad trans person.
I don't think so.
But I don't think so, and I don't think I want to. I think they will evolve and change and maybe become less rigid and probably become more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the nature of humanity is to categorize things.
Mm.
And I don't think we'll move to a point where we're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, there might be more categories. Those categories might become more fluid, and there might be more ways to inhabit those categories, but I don't think we'd ever eliminate them entirely. And I think doing so would be boring.
Mm-hmm.
I think being able to see different representations of things like gender make it easier for you to role model yourself and create the kind of person you want to. And I think gender is... I would like to see a world where gender isn't a set of rules, but it is a playground.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want it to go away, I just want it to be more fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I relate to that a lot. This episode of The Dildorks was sponsored by our pals at peepshowtoys.com. They have so many great body-safe toys available on their site. Like, just really an excellently curated selection, and I say that as a total snob. And since we're talking about gender, I do want to particularly mention toys by Split Peaches, who make, like, unicorn horn dildos and, like, this thing called the Riveter that sort of looks like a weird robot dick. And a dildo that looks like a screw, like, I mean, a literal, like you would get with IKEA furniture, a screw. they make toys that I think would be really, really fun for strap-on play if you just wanted your strap-on dick to look like it was just, like, existing beyond gender, which is definitely in my interests. I do want to fuck someone with a rainbow unicorn horn. That does thrill me to the core of my bones. But Peep Show has, like, all kinds of great stuff. They have a lot of kink toys. They have a lot of toys for people of various genders and bodies. They have a lot of our favorite vibes and dildos. They have all the Enjoy stuff. And I was going to say more things, but, like, Enjoy is, like, of primary importance, really. So, yeah, check them out. They're at peepshowtoys.com. They're often having cool sales and stuff. And they're good folks. They've supported us before, and we're happy to have them back again. Thanks, Peep Show. Fuck That and Fuck Yeah is a segment we haven't done in a long ass time, where we tell you something we hate and something we love. And this week we're talking about gender, I think. What's your Fuck That, friend?
My Fuck That is a complicated one.
Mm-hmm.
It's my binders, because I love them. They're from GC2B. They're fantastic. But there is so much clothing I can't wear when I'm wearing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't not bind, because then that is the fastest way to get misgendered.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the straps are really thick, and I wear the half binders, so I can get away with a lot more clothes than I could with, like, a full-length binder from another company. But, like, I can't really wear tank tops without showing my binder. I can't, like, crop tops have to be a certain length. And it's just, there are so many outfits that I cannot wear until after I get top surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited to be able to wear those outfits. But in the meantime, binders make my outfit decisions so much harder.
Yeah.
What's your Fuck That?
My Fuck That is body hair. Body hair is the bane of my existence. It's fine on other people. I'm totally talking about it on myself. I actually, like, went back and looked through my tweets at one point and found that on multiple occasions I've tweeted something about wanting to make a deal with the devil, like, to release me from my body hair. Sell my soul and take my pubes away. I've been, like, shaving my leg hair and my pubes and my underarm hair since they grew in, which was quite early, because I was an early bloomer when it came to puberty, and, like, I've occasionally experimented with growing them out a little to see how that felt, and it always felt really bad for me, psychologically and just, like, physically. I'm just, like, not a fan, and I want to be rid of it forever. So if you are a very wealthy benefactor and you would like to pay for me to get laser hair removal all over my whole body, I'd be into that. Get in touch. What's your Fuck Yeah, friend?
My fuck yeah is language, because it's one of the fastest ways to kind of affirm my gender is using the right language around it. Mm. What's tricky is I don't always even know what that language is, because sometimes it's super affirming and other times it feels contrived. Mm. And it feels like people are just kind of humoring me. But when I can, like, when I get kind of the perfect storm of people talking about me and my body in the right way, it's probably one of the more affirming things out there.
It's nice.
What's your fuck yeah?
My fuck yeah is wearing fragrances that are men's or genderless fragrances. There's so many things in, like, fashion and beauty, and also just, like, the world in general that are very, like, marketed in a gendered way and really don't have to be. And I think fragrances is, like, one of the major ones that comes to mind for me, because it's, like, what even is a masculine or feminine smell? Like, why do we need to, you know, anybody can smell, like, flowers or leather or whatever. And I really have gotten into perfumes and colognes and stuff in the past couple of years, and I enjoy kind of, like, very subtly playing with how I feel through the way that I smell, because it's usually just me who's enjoying it, because I'm a work-from-home freelancer, so I'm just, like, there inhaling my wrist all day, and it can really change up the way that you feel about yourself in nice ways, and doesn't have to be gendered. Wow. Okay, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks. Hope it gave you some stuff to think about. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together with the Dildorks, we're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate us and give us a review. It brings us up in the charts. It makes us easier to find. And if you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/thedildorks, toss a couple of bucks our way, and get exclusive bonuses. If you're at the $3 level or more, you get access to our hypothetical videos, where we get super high and answer your hypothetical questions.
They're really cute. We look adorable in them, and we're very funny. If you're going to be at the Woodhill Sexual Freedom Summit this week, oh my god, it's so soon, come say hi. We are also doing a live Dildorks recording, so check that out on the schedule. Really excited to meet all y'all.
I will be there very briefly, so if you want to see me, come to the recording, because that's pretty much the only place I'll be.
Yeah, very limited Bex time. We're also on a panel about personal storytelling as activism with Kevin Patterson and Dirty Lola, and it's going to be rad. I'm really excited for that. Thank you so much to Protodome for letting us use his song I Want You in My Bedroom as our theme song. And thank you to Amy, who did our logo. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you again to our pals at Peep Show Toys for sponsoring this episode of our show. They'll also be sponsoring our Woodhull show this week, and I'm really excited about that too. So check out their website at peepshowtoys.com. They have a great selection of sex toys, and you will find something that you enjoy. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. Bye. There's weed stuck to the base of my microphone.
That would make classic sense.
Yeah, I don't know how it all gets here.